Torreway, North West London, 6th of April, Chof, I can't read this, Zayin Adar Beis, Harav Gedalia Lieberman, Kashering for Pesach.
Morning. As you heard, the subject is Kashering. Story. It was back a number of years ago, a young one, and Eretz Yisrael, and a Harusa, a fellow who lived in the kibbutz near the yeshiva, and he wasn't frum, call it, but he wanted to learn a bit of Torah. And I would learn with him, I think it was once a week, and we bumped into the subject of Bittul B'Shishin, which we're all familiar with, and I translated it into a simple story. If you have a big pot of chicken soup, a little bit of milk falls in, then if the milk is less than 1/60th of the content of the chicken soup, so then you can drink the chicken soup, as we all know. And he turns to me and said, I'm happy you tell me that, because I know that from people keep meat and milk separate. And I'm fine with that. That's the rule. But then I heard that they also have two separate sets of dishes and two separate sets of pots. And I always thought that's a very extreme. So he tells me. And I'm pleased you tell me now that you can even have a little bit of milk falling into chicken soup and it's still okay. So certainly, just having a milky pot cooking a chicken soup, I mean, it can't be worse than a little bit of milk. That's what he said to me. And therefore, I'm pleased to hear that I was right. It's extreme. I was a young bocha and I didn't know the answer to this question. So I told him, I don't know. I do know that you do have to kasher, because it's a mefurish pasuk in the Torah. That much I knew. By Mechemes Midyon, the Torah tells us that the kelim, achzazov, v'sakesef, v'sakdil, v'sakfores, v'sakhoishes, the Torah says all the metal kelim that the Yidden took from the Midyonim, anything that that was used in fire has to be kashered in fire. So it's a clear psukim that you have to kasher the kelim. How to fit this in with the rule of Bittul B'Shishim? I told them I don't know the answer. But I got a little bit older and I learned a little bit more. And essentially the answer is that when you cook in a keli, let's say milk a keli, let's start like this. We hold tam ki ikur is midaraisa. Not only a piece of horse meat is a problematic, or chometz is a problem on Pesach, rather also tam, also the taste of non-kosher foods, also is osur min haTorah. And if that taste goes into a kosher food, if my kosher food has the taste of a non-kosher food, so then I can't eat it. That's the din, tam ki ikur. So Chom tells us that the walls of the pot absorb the tam, they absorb the taste of the food that you cook inside. So if I'm cooking meat, so the walls of the pot absorb the meat. I'm cooking milk, the walls of the pot absorb the milk. Same with chometz, same with non-kosher. How much goes in and how much comes out, so you don't know. But one assumes that the entire quantity of the, you assume all the metal, let's take a metal pot, all the metal is full, is saturated, is full, is from blius, from being absorbed with meaty or milky or chometz or prep, whatever it is. And then if you measure all the metal in all the walls against the content of the pot, so the way it'll work is, unless you have a huge pot with very thin walls, it's always going to be always going to be more than shishim. Now the Chazal put it as a rule, the poskim can point out, the walls of the pot are always more than 1/60th of the content of the pot. It's practically all the pots that we have in the kitchen are like that, if you measure it. Theoretically, it could be a very thin walls with a huge equal size, you know, in other words, in all directions, and then it won't be a bittul b'shishim. But essentially,
with respect, is the answer not that the whole kale is by layer?
All the walls of the Keli Abaleia, that's right, that's what I'm saying.
It might be less than a 60th, which it is.
No, no, the entire wall of the Keli is more than a 60th of the content in the pot. That's what So that's where kashering comes in. What we're trying to do is get rid of those blias, right? The pot is full of the blias. It's absorbed with either trade for or chametz, whatever it is. And we're trying to get rid of it. And
isn't the answer to his question that you can't be in the batalis lechatchila? You can't plant that in the batalis.
Yeah, there is also a rule of in batalis lechatchila. But first of all, according to most opinions, it's only the rabbanon. That wouldn't work for the Torah's chiyuv tekasha. That's A. B, if in that case, then whenever you do cook in a tray for keli, even if it's ben yoyim, etc., it would always be mutter. And the answer is it's not mutter. If you cook in a tray for keli and it's not ben yoyim, the food is also. And it's ben yoyim, I'm sorry, the food is also. Because it's not batal b'shishim. So the answer is, the reason is it's not batal b'shishim. In other words, his question was, he figured that it can't be that it's more than 1/60th that's coming out. Chazal tell us it is more than 1/60th. If you measure against the entire walls of the pot, then it's more than 1/60th. It is also true that you have to deal with the name of Atanis Lechatchila. That's true. But before that, it's...
That was the case at the end of the shir. Straight away the shir. You know.
Yeah, there'll be no kashering. But the mindset we do have kashering, and we have an issue with the blias. So the question is how you get it out. So let me just explain. The purpose of the shir is not so much to go through... the practical halachas, the proti halachas, which will take more than one shir and it'll be difficult to... But to give a little bit, hopefully, a little bit of an understanding into the way the kashering works and some of the halachas behind, some of the understanding behind the halachas. It begins with a Gemara in Avodah Zorah, which is interesting to point out. There's two Gemaras that discuss kashering. One is a Gemara in Avodah Zorah, and one is a Gemara in Psochim, and it's not incidental. Kashering is either from Kelim of Goyim, non-treif, so that's why you have a Gemara in Avodah Zorah. And the second time you kasha is when it comes Pesach, you have issues of chametz. So again, you have to kasha. In Shulchan Aruch also, the halachas of kashering are in two places, both in Yerideah, in the halachas of kasherus, and again, or before that, in Erechaim, in Simtav and Tavna Beis, in Hilchos Pesach. That's the two times you have to kasha. People bump into it, I would say, more common people bump into it on Pesach. I mean, you know, it can happen during the year also. Often when something goes wrong during the year, you wait for Pesach to kasha. Once upon a time, people kashered a lot for Pesach. Today, people kasher less. But nevertheless, most people still bump into kashering, unless you have a Pesach kitchen. So usually, people will kasher the kitchen, kasher the counters or the sink. So therefore, that's where I think most people bump into it. That's the most common. And trying a bit of understanding what's happening. It begins with the Brice, with the Mishnah in Avodah Zorah. But I'll say it the way the Brice says it, because it's more in detail. The Brice begins... Kalim shemashtamish behem al yedei tzoinen, kalim that you buy from a goy that were used with cold content, like koisoy, it says tzloichiyos. So madichon, matzbilon, main tovin. What you have to do is you have to rinse them, you have to table them. That's another shir tefilas kalim, another subject. And then the Torah, kalim shemashtamish behem al yedei chamin, kalim that were used with hot content. So then you have to do hagola. What you have to do is a gola, which means you put it in a pot. That's the classical gola that we all know. You go to the kashering center, whatever it is, and you put your keli in a pot of boiling water, which is sitting on the fire, and that removes all the yissa. Kelim shemashtamish ben alidei, or kelim that received the taste of treif or chometz alidei, or directly from the heat of fire, not through liquid. In other words, you didn't cook in it. Rather, the food was sitting on the keli, and then the heat of fire was nearby and transferring the tam. I guess the most classical case of this, even though an oven would also be an example, a barbecue. Imagine the tray of the barbecue. Somebody's put, made. This happens often. You know, you go to holiday houses, whatever it is. You want to use a barbecue which isn't kosher. You want to kasher the barbecue. So you have to kasher the tray. Somebody has put a tray for burger there. It's received the tam, the tray for tam, the taste from the burger, not through being cooked. Rather, directly from the heat of fire. And then the way of kashering that is what we call libun. You put it directly into the fire. That's the price, and that's the golden rule when it comes to kashering. Kaboiloi, kach, poltoi. The same level of heat, the same way, the same method that the blias went in. That's kach, poltoi, that's the way you get it out. Let me just adapt it to some practical scenarios, if I may. You have a pot of chicken soup, yeah? In the chicken soup you cook knedelach. So it's chametz stick, right? So what level of heat did those knedlach, what level of heat was the pot bilea, did the pot absorb that chomet, the knedlach, the taste of the knedlach? The answer is it's on a klirishon sitting on the fire, it's a keli on the fire, with boiling water. So the way you'd kasha that pot is also hagola on a klirishon. You take the pot, and ideally if you can't do this, you dip it into the huge pot of boiling water, and take it out, and it's kosher for Pesach. Yeah, that would be, on the other hand, the soup bowl, which that didn't, the soup bowl never sat on the fire, so it never received the chometz from the knedel from a klirishon. The most it received is a iri klirishon. It was poured from a klirishon. Yeah, either from a ladle or from the soup bowl itself. You poured into the bowl, so that's iri klirishon. The water that's been poured from a klirishon, same thing, the way to kasher it would be, you take a kettle of boiling water, you can just pour the water over the bowl, assuming it's a material that you're able to kasher, and then that would be the way you kasher it. The spoon with which you eat the soup, that went into the soup, which was a klisheni. So in order to kasher that, same thing, I can boil a kettle of water, pour the water into a bowl, put the spoon inside, and I have then kashered the spoon. Yeah, that's because the way I use it is a klisheni. If you sometimes use the spoon to put it in the, to take out a knedel from the soup, or to put it into the cholent, you sometimes use your spoons that you eat with also in the klirishon. So then it's a machloikus. It's very interesting. One would think, then for sure you have to kasher the klirishon. There is one opinion, machloikus in the Rishonim. One opinion says you go basa roiv tashmishon. You follow the majority of the use. If it's generally used in a klisheni, you kasher it with a klisheni. Lechatchila we paskin. Relying that with the evidence, in some cases, lechatchila we paskin, you have to follow the hottest use. So if you may have used your spoon in the pot, you have to kasher in a klirishon. You have to go to the kashering center. You can't just do it this easy way in a klisheni. If ever you're certain that you didn't use the spoon in a pot, in your house everything's very organized, you only use serving spoons or ladles to put in your soup, and an eating spoon you only eat with, so then that could be kashered in a klisheni. That's the basic rules. An oven, the oven tray, which the challah sat on the oven tray. Over there it wasn't a klirishon, it was rather bolea lidei or, it was directly from the heat of fire. So in order to kasher that, you need something called libun, which means you have to put the tray in fire until it becomes red hot. That's the simple halacha. There are opinions that are more lenient, but we're not going to be able to go through it this year, maybe another time.
So libun is not kabbalah kachpaltoi.
It's machloikas whereby libun we say kabbalah kachpaltoi.
Yeah, because that's machloikas. Not saying you can just put on the oven to the same temperature.
That's right. So some opinions say you can just put the oven on to the same temperature, and they say the same rule. Kabbalah kachpaltoi, the same level of heat that it absorbs, that's the level of heat that it gives out. But that's a machloikas between the different chuvas forum, different poskim. The machmirim say that no, libun works differently. Libun doesn't spit it out, b'chal. Libun burns the issa. And to burn it, there's a level of heat that you need to burn it. Okay? So if we
self-cleaning oven normally is that
self-cleaning oven is much more straightforward. That's right, especially if it reaches 900 degrees, as some of them do, then it's a full libun. It's a full libun. If we just use these rules a second, how would you kasher a counter? According to the rules that we've said, how would you kasher the countertop? So when did the countertop receive chometz? So the first thing is, let me say, well, I put a pot which is balua, which is full of chometz, on the counter. So there we have a rule that itself wouldn't be an issue. Because the rule is, Nikradin, ein kli balea mikli balei rotev. One piece of metal doesn't absorb from another piece of metal without some sort of liquid in between. Without a rotev, without a liquid in between. So therefore, if I put a clean pot on the counter, the fact that the pot is full of chomets, or full of treif, that won't cause it to go into the, counter. Because the blias, that which is absorbed in the pot, can't come out without some sort of rotev, without some sort of a liquid. Yeah, so that itself isn't an issue. And that's essentially why some people are mekel, as I have in my house, I only have one stove for milchiks and for fleishiks. If the pot is dry, and the stove is dry, so then mi'ikra din, we say that ein kli b'leah mikli, even if the stove isn't kosher, it cannot, the blias, that which is absorbed in the metal, won't go into my pot without a rotev. Obviously, if the things spill over, then you bump into big problems. However, when does the counter receive chometz? Sometimes a little bit of soup spills over, right? Or other foods. Yeah, so let's imagine, but let's keep this example of the soup, the knedelach, a little bit of soup spills over. What would that be? What level of heat would that be? Yuri Klirishon. It's been poured from the soup bowl. The soup bowl, the pot of soup is a Klirishon. It's the pot that was on the fire. That which is poured out is Yuri Klirishon. So the simple halacha would be the way you kasher it, is you take a kettle of hot water, or a pot that you've heated up with hot water, and just pour it over the counter, and it's kashered. Right? That's what the simple way to kasher would be, and that's what the Mechaber says in Shulchan Aruch, that you want to counter the Shulchanos, different surfaces, tables, surfaces that you put hot food on. You want to use it now for Pesach, in Tofel and Aleph. You just pour the boiling water over it. Yeah. However, the Poiskim, the Achronim, bring the Marivayel, who says, no, it's not good enough. Yaakov brings it, and it's brought in the Mishnah Berurah, and the Shulchan Aruch, and the different Poiskim. It's not good enough, because sometimes you may have put a pashtido chama, a hot pashtido, some sort of a pie or whatever it is, but for practically it means any dobra gosh, any solid. Cholent maybe, sometimes, depends how you make it, but the better would be, practically, for this halacha, better to use the example of a challah. You may have taken, that's a dover gush, that's a solid. You may have taken a challah out of the oven and put it on the counter. Now that challah, you'd say, it's come out of a klirishon, it's come out of the oven. But we say by a solid, we're machmer and we say, certainly this kind of solid, we say that it retains its heat. If you take a soup and pour it out of the pot, it cools down a bit. But a challah, you take it out of the oven, it retains its heat and it still remains the heat of a klirishon. So therefore, when you put that challah onto the counter, it absorbs potter than iri klirishon. It absorbs like a klirishon. So in order to kasher that, you need a kasher the counter in a klirishon. Again, what's a klirishon? A klirishon means the pot which is on the fire. Which is on the fire. Now, how can you dip the counter into the pot on the fire? You can't do that, right? Usually it's be difficult to take the counter and dip it into the pot on the fire. So what we do is, we create a fire on the counter. In other words, theoretically what we're trying to do is, to be machmer for this revival, we're trying to kasher the counter in a klirishon. And the way it's done is, we say, if you pour from a klirishon, it's not good enough. So you use what's called an ever meluban. That's the classical way, where it's in Shulchan Aruch, you take a boiling hot stone, which is boiling hot, so now this stone is like an element of heat. It itself is an element of heat, it's boiling hot. You put it on the counter, you pour the hot water over the stone, and this way, the water's been heated up on the counter. It's not that it's been heated up in the pot and then poured onto the counter. On the counter, you have your klirishon. On the counter, the water's been heated up. And that this way, you've kashered the counter in a klirishon. And that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, the ideal way to do it is to kasher the counter both with an iri klirishon and an ever meluban. Because it's sometimes difficult, it's difficult to do it right. The ever meluban has to be in every single spot. It depends on the exact angles. It's sometimes impossible to do right. Sometimes difficult to do right. Some people are afraid of doing this. Sometimes it makes too much mess. So many people just do an iri klirishon, but they also cover the counter. Yeah? So most people do some sort of kashering. It's not a perfect kashering. To do a perfect kashering, you've got to be very careful. You have to make sure you've done it all right. But you also cover the counter. Theoretically, covering the counter itself is enough. Why is it enough? Because, let's think about it. If you just cover the counter, so what's going to happen? You've covered the counter, you put a pot on top of the cover. So now, the cover gets hot, and the counter might get hot, but the counter can't give its blias to the cover, because ein kli b'leim kli b'lo reitav. One keli can't go through to another keli without a reitav, without a liquid in between. So therefore, theoretically, just covering is enough. And if you cover well, that's fine. If you cover well, that's fine. But the ma'aser, many people are machmir, because you're worried that if you cover, what happens if a little bit of liquid does get in between the two things? And it gets heated up, so then then the counter is going to be poilu, it's going to spit out its blias, its chomets, it's going to spit out its chomets into the cover and then into the pot, so you're going to have problems. So to be on the safe side, people both kasher as well as you can. Some people do with an ever meluban, without an ever meluban. If it's without an ever meluban, then you're following the majority of the use. The majority of the use wasn't a pashtida, it was only an iri klirishon. So if you do it without an ever meluban, it's also to some extent a good kashering. You just pour the boiling water, and then you cover it, and this way you're, so to speak, safe on both sides. Yeah. Somebody has the minute to do it all, so I do it at my house, both kasher, with an ever meluban, and cover. So on Pesach, there's no end to the chumras that people do. Yeah. The purpose of the shir isn't to discourage any chumras, rather to explain the way things work a little bit. We have a couple more minutes, and I want to go into a little bit of a more of a lomdisha part of the discussion. There's an obvious question, which I imagine some people are thinking, and a little bit surprised that nobody has asked. You come to the the kashering center, whatever it is, where over here they have, sure they have places with the big pots of hot water, and you put your chametz sticker pot inside, let's see. So how does it work? It's poiluk, it spits out all the chametz, and where does the chametz go? The chametz goes into the water. So now that water's chametz sticker, and then what happens? Your pot is poilea. Your pot, once again, absorbs all the chametz. So how have you helped? Yeah, you put it to the same questions on the counter. Imagine you pour the boiling water on top, even put it in a little bit. So it's poiluk, it spits out all the chametz, but then it's poilea right away, there's hot water here.
If it's busy to be spit out, it's not poilea.
Oh, so people know the rule of the ravio. The question is clear, right? Just before we get to the answer, huh?
Yeah,
that's a question. It's an obvious question. So what people are familiar with is the rule of the ravio that says, I did the torah lemifrat leibolo. While a keli is busy being poilet, while it's busy spitting out, it's not able to also be boilea, it's not also to absorb. Right? It works in this in all sorts of settings, yeah? You know for yourself, if you're busy teaching, it's difficult to learn. Yeah? Busy learning, it's difficult to teach. So I did the torah lemifrat leibolo. The Maisa, the Pashtus, although we choshes of the Ravya, we don't nem on the Ravya.
The next one is
the Vor is, as soon as you put it in, it starts in poilet, starts spitting out. But it doesn't have and you take it out before it's as it finishes spitting out, you take it out, and then it doesn't have a chance to be Balea. First of all, how are you supposed to work out how long to leave it there for? You're gonna get the exact right amount of time. Secondly, make redim and don't pass it. In other words, we're not making like the Ravya. This is not the answer that we really go with. Might be machmal of that, not to leave it in too long, but the ikateritz is other tirutzim. And if I can go through briefly some of the answers. Essentially, there's five mahalchim in the Rishonim how to deal with this issue. The question all the Rishonim ask. The Gemara says you do kashering, gives you different scenarios, that you put a small pot in a big pot, yeah, exactly as we do. And the Rishonim will ask, well, how does it help? Whatever comes out goes straight back in. So you're pointing out one of the answers, that it doesn't have a chance. The first teretz is different mahalach, different ways to explain the Gemara, and each one means you have to do it in different ways and do different things. We'll see what we can get through. The first thing is, if you make sure that it's bottle b'shishim, and this is the best advice, and the Shulchan Aruch says that you should do it this way if you can. You make sure it's bottle b'shishim, which means that you, let's say I'm kashering a spoon, so the spoon is full of chometz. I put it in a huge kashering pot, so the chometz goes out. How much? Now that chometz is now bottle b'shishim, right? The kashrut pot, the water in the pot, is certainly 60 times more than the chometz in the spoon. So the water is now, so to speak, kosher. You can drink the water on Pesach. It's bottle b'shishim, right? Bottle before Pesach. Came bottle. So it's not chometz thick anymore. The water goes back in with the chometz, that's fine. Now it's bottle b'shishim. Now the chometz is less than 1/60th. Right? So that would work. The problem is, when you go to the kashrut place, that works for the first guy who comes. It might work for the second guy, but the third guy, when it's too late. The first guy comes, puts in his kalim into the huge kashering pot. Yeah. All the chametz comes out. The second, it's bottle b'shishim. The second guy comes, more chametz comes out. Third guy, more chametz. By the time the third or fourth person's there, the chametz is more than 1/60th than the water.
Unless you say that once it's bottled, then it's all...
Right. Unless you say there is a rule that kama bottle, that sometimes we say that once it's bottled, it's over. But that doesn't work with the bittel of shishim. The bittel of shishim is a bittel of tam. And there, everyone agrees with the chayz of an era. Almost everyone agrees. The bittel of shishim, the way it works is, what's the vort of 1/60th? That if the ratio is less than 1/60, then it doesn't give taste. If the ratio is more than 1/60, it gives taste. And tam is awesome. So to say that the first one was bottled, so it's over, it's not over anymore. It's not over. Now there's less than 1/60th of chometz, so you don't taste the chometz. The second guy comes, or the third guy, or the fifth guy, whatever it is, and puts in more chometz, now there's more chometz, and you do taste the chometz. So
taste the chometz.
Well, once there's more than a 60th,
spoons in the water, you won't,
you're asking that you won't taste it. Okay, that's another question. That's another question. That how come we don't feel the taste? But Al Chazal tell us, in other words, the rules that we go with is when the chometz is more than 1/60, we're choishes that the tam is already there. Yeah, might be need to be a professional to taste it, but the according to the rules, the tam is already there. So this eitzah works theoretically. It's an answer, but it's only if you do that. And it's difficult to do that, so therefore we go with other eitzahs.
It'll also be okay if none of the kelim are benyamim.
Right, so that's another solution over here.
They say at the kashering, they say that every kelim you should bring is
that's right. Okay, so you bring that one up, so that's the one we'll try and go through. So to try and do it in 5 minutes. Bianchi is suggesting that if the kelim are not benyamim, if it's been 24 hours since the kelim are used, which that's the way you're supposed to kasher, you're supposed to wait 24 hours before you kasher, so then it also solves the problem. How does it solve the problem? So, the rule is that to do this, I have to get this into. The rule is that noisin tam levgam is mutter. In other words, this. If I say, if I've cooked milk, it's in a fleshy keli. So I say the meat came out into the milk and it gave taste, and therefore it's now forbidden to eat my the cheese egg that are fried in the fleshy pan. Yep. However, if it's been 24 hours since the keli has been used, so then I say that the taste, the tam, which is sitting in the keli, in the walls of the keli for 24 hours, has become, you know, it's sitting out, it's not in the fridge, it's been sitting out for 24 hours, it's become pogum, it's become ruined, the taste. The taste that this meat, which is balua, which is absorbed in the keli, now gives to the egg which I fried, the omelette which I made, the taste it gives is a tam levgam. It's a bad taste, it's not a positive taste. And therefore, it's mutter. And that's why, if you have a fleshka keli and it hasn't been used for 24 hours, you by mistake cook milchiks in it. You by mistake cook milki, so that keli, the pot is treif, because it's balua from basar, and it's balua from cholov. But the food you can eat, because true, the taste of basar has come out. But it's not a gum. The taste it gives isn't a positive taste, a negative taste, and therefore it's mutter. So the taste that comes out is mutter. So you're going to ask, so why do you have to kasha the keli if so? Why do you have to kasha the keli? If it's been 24 hours, you don't need to kasher it. All the taste that comes out is not going to ruin the food. The answer is, you're right. The Torah only forbids, the Torah says to break the kli midyon, to kasha the kli midyon. It means the kelim which you want to use right after the war, right after the goyim used the kelim. If you've waited 24 hours, min haTorah, you do not need to kasher anything. It's only midrabbanon that you need to kasher it. Midrabbanon, we're worried that if you use the keli after 25 hours, you might use it after 23 hours, and then it'll be an issur d'oraisa. So therefore, midrabbanon, you cannot use the keli even though it's past 24 hours, and that's why we do the kashering. Yeah? But the principle is the food is okay, because there's damn gam. The keli we forbid. Over here, what have you done? You kasher it, it's been 24 hours, so the tam has come out into the water. The tam has come out into the water. The water's okay. The keli may be forbidden, but you've taken the taste out and it's come into the water, the water's okay. Now the keli goes back in, now the tam goes back in, it's okay, because I was able to drink the water. If I'm able to drink the water, it goes back into the keli, I can still have it, because there's no tam levgam. That's one of the mahalchim we're training, but that's not the way it works in Maisa. It's just I'm struggling with the clock, I don't know how to work this out. We don't go with that mahalach. Maisa, we say that a keli always is osur, even if the taste came in from water that was mutter. If there's taste of issur in a keli, even if it's lo yisdam levgam, it's still osur. Only the food is mutter. The system we use is not by nat. I'll try and do this very briefly. This is... Exactly, 2 minutes. The system we use is what's called nat by nat, which essentially means this. Shai lemaisa. If I have pasta that I've cooked in a fleshy pot, I can eat it with cheese afterwards. Any suggestions? So essentially, it is the mechaber holds ikar din of the Gemara according to most Rishonim. It is muta. It's muta because I say it is. Why is it muta? The pasta has the taste of fleshiks. The meat's gone into the pot, come out into the pasta, the taste of meat. How can I eat it with cheese? It's possible cholov. Nevertheless, ikar din is muta. And the logic is that. It's noisin tam or noisin tam. The taste of the meat goes into the pot. It's become less. It's become weaker. That taste then goes into the pasta. It's become even less. That little bit of taste can't become an issa. If that was already issa, it wouldn't help me that it's become very weak. But if it's heter, meat, fleshix is heter, and it's become very weak, it's so weak it can't become issa. That's the principle of an at bar nat. Yeah? The Ramah is more machmer, and he says, A, it has to be not ben yoyma, and B, I can't do it lechatchila. I can only, if I've already done it, then I can eat it. So the way it works over here is this. When you kasha, the clock is against us. So the way it works is this. That noisin tam levgam is be'etzem heter. It's not, you can't have it in the pot, but it's be'etzem heter. When it comes out into the content, and then goes back into the pot, so now it's already not bernat, it's been weakened. And it's still heter because it's noisin tam heter. So heter can't become issa if it's been weakened. I'll just finish off with a very brief story. Noisin tam levgam. Again, the rule, I just want to say it lemaisa. The rule when it comes to nat bar nat is as follows. I want to eat the pasta in the pot, right? According to Ramah, according to the Shnazim, lechatchila I cannot cook. A, the pot has to be not benyoyimoy, and B, I can't cook the pot lechatchila in order to have with pasta, with cheese. If I did it already, then I can go and take it out of the pot and have it with cheese. One time somebody was in my house, and he wanted to prepare a fish. I only have a fleischig oven. And he said to me, can I prepare the fish in the fleischig oven, and then we'll then go and eat it with cheese? Besides the shiloh of fish and cheese, putting that aside, I said, no, you can't prepare the fish in the fleischig oven in order to have it with cheese. Ramos machmer lechatchila, you can't do nut by nut. The fleischig's gone into the oven, into the fish, in order to have it with cheese. So he said, okay, we'll prepare the fish anyway. We won't have it with cheese. Put the fish in the oven. That's it. Comes out. I said, now we can have it with cheese. That's the halacha l'maisa. Just the way it works. A kosher for the pesach.
Good.